everybody. Thanks for listening to the RacerX podcast show. Just a quick reminder that you can email me at mathes@racerxonline.com, M-A-T-T-H-E-S, and I'll do my best to respond to you. Check me out on Twitter at PulpMX, as well as check out PulpMX.com for some cool stuff that I think you might like. But anyways, on to the show. Thanks for listening. Hey, everyone. This is Steve Mathes. Thanks for listening to the RacerX podcast show. Before we begin the show, I just wanted to give a little shout-out to my new friends at BTOSports.com. BTOSports.com has teamed up with yours truly to provide you podcast listeners with a cool free deal. What you want to do is go to BTOSports.com and check out all the sweet stuff from Fly Racing, Fuel Graphics, O'Neill, Stella, FMF, Liat, and Vortex. They carry these lines along with pretty much anything else that you need for your bike or body. So you go there. The cool thing is, you order more than $100, and really, what's $100 these days? James Stewart has that much in his Lambo ashtray. Anyways, order more than $100, type in the offer code MATHES, M-A-T-T-H-E-S, in the coupon section, right when you're checking out, and you'll get a special deal. It's so special, they haven't even really told me yet what it is. So to recap, go to btosports.com, spend $100, type in MATHES in the coupon section upon checkout, and get some kind of hella super sweet deal. Remember to check out their closeouts at btosports.com is a proud sponsor of the BBMX race team. All right, on to this week's show.
This is a warning. Your brain may explode from listening to this show. We will not be held responsible if it does. What are you going to do about it anyway? You won't have a head. You've been warned. And now, welcome to the RacerX podcast show with Steve Mathes.
This is the RacerX podcast show. I'm your host, Steve Mathes, and we have another guest in studio here. And by studio, I mean my den. Following in the footsteps of Guy B last week, I have none other than Alan Brown from Brown Motorsports. What's going on?
Hey, Steve. I just out here this week doing some testing with the Hart and Huntington race team.
Yeah, how's that going? Second year you're doing their motors. They got Bonnie and Matt Bonnie and Chris Blows. And how's things with that?
It's going pretty good. It's Matt Bonney's returning after joining the team last year. It's Chris Blows' first year on a 450, and they're both looking pretty good right now.
Yeah, who's faster?
I really don't know. I actually haven't seen them both ride at the same time, So it's hard to say.
Bonney being top privateer last year using your motor specs, and Blows coming off a pretty good season for Troy Lee Honda last year. He should be doing well. When you're building a motor for these guys, what do you start with? Do you start a stock with a stock motor and you just build it up from there into what you think they like?
We actually started with Blows. We started a stock bike, and Matt Wallace from Independent came out and set the suspension up and spent a day testing with Chris, getting him comfortable on the Honda.
Yeah.
And then we let him ride that for a week, basically a stock bike with suspension.
Yeah.
And then we started introducing engine work. So we're at a decent point on the engine stuff, but we're going to have to go back and do some suspension testing again.
Yeah. And do you have, in your mind, you're familiar with the Hondas from your days at Triple X. Do you have a package one, a package two, a package three, like kind of not as the rider gets more and more comfortable?
Well, for Chris, I built something that's, tunable, a good setting. Something that I thought was pretty neutral that we could either go more aggressive with or kind of make it a little more mellow. Just depending on the riding style.
Right.
This is Chris's first year on a 450 in Supercross, coming off 250s. So he's still looking for something. It was almost a little too aggressive for him. He's looking for something a little bit more controllable where he can ride the bike more than the bike rides him.
Right, right. And in your opinion, is that a good way to go?
Yeah,
I mean, every rider is set up his own way, but what do you know? Must have some personal thoughts on it, you know?
I think, you know, a 450 needs to be rideable, especially even if a Supercross is only 20 laps at 52 seconds a lap. They still need to be able to ride it at, you know, lap 17, 18, and 19.
Yeah.
As hard as they're riding it on the first lap and not be worried about it getting away from them.
Right. Now, the 450 four-strokes, they're already too much bike for an indoor stadium, really, in effect.
There, yeah. You can easily build it too much. You
yeah.
can easily make too much power,
yeah.
and it's just unrideable.
I know, like, when I was at Yamaha, it seemed like our first-year settings were, you know, would pull stumps out, and then we got milder and milder each season in the setup until finally the guys were like, you know, it's perfect. I can ride it for 20 laps, like you said. I can go, you know, I can kind of know where I'm going. If they screw up a little bit and give it too much gas, that's okay. It's not going to overjump something by 10 feet into the face of something else. Is that kind of what your goal is?
Yeah, that's the goal. I mean, some of the riders I've worked with in the past have asked for, they're like, no, just leave it stock. Make sure the carburetor's perfect. Make sure everything runs
yeah.
perfect. And it's like, I ride in first gear.
Yeah.
And these guys are riding an entire Supercross track in first gear because
yeah.
they know first gear won't overjump stuff. They
yeah.
know that they're restricted by the engine.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty amazing. Like, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, and I mean, good riders. You'd
yeah.
be surprised. They're like, you know.
Well, we were out of the track today with Bonnie, and he made a comment that he rides the whole track in second, except for the whoops in fourth. So,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, a lot of guys and a lot of teams, I mean, a lot of the factories will have transmissions that second and third gear are almost identical.
Yeah.
And then a big gap up to fourth gear,
yeah.
you know, for the whoops. So,
as a privateer motor builder and a guy like you that's built so many motors for so many privateers over the years, tranny parts are the one thing that's kind of like you can't get, tranny gears.
It's just a pretty big investment to go out
yeah.
and get your own gears done, you know, because typically if a company has gear designs, they're not going to sell you their designs. They're going to want you to buy your own or make your own, and then there'll be a minimum that you're going to have to produce for it to be,
yeah.
you know, worthwhile for the manufacturer.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's, you know, working on a factory level like I did, you know, a taller first gear was automatic. You put that in no matter what. They all loved it, you know, and I would guess that a privateer could probably benefit from a company putting the capital into buying transmissions. You just don't see it.
Yeah, it'd be nice. It'd be something that would be nice for the privateers. It's
yeah.
something that there's, I don't know of any privateers that have it versus every factory team has options.
Yeah, yeah. What else, in your opinion, do you think is the biggest difference between a privateer race bike and a factory bike?
Suspension and chassis, I think, is where the factory bike can have a huge, huge advantage.
Yeah.
You know, again, we're talking about 450 cc engines. They're plenty fast.
Yeah.
We're limited by the suspension, the chassis, the handling. Those advantages are huge.
Offset races, another thing that you really can't buy, privateers.
Yeah, a privateer, it's another thing, you know, because of AMA production rules, you can't change the head angle on a motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
But you can change the bearing races, and you can get offset bearing races that will dramatically change the head angle and change the complete handling of the motorcycle.
Yeah.
Typically, privateers don't have that stuff either.
Although now I see more and more clamps are offset. Back in the day, you couldn't really get offset clamps even. You'd have to drill them yourself. Seems like more and more manufacturers are offering offsets of all point, which changes something, you know, changes your trail, doesn't change your rake, and that's an advantage for privateer. At least there's a little bit there.
Yeah, there's something there. I think that's been available in road racing for a long time, and it's coming over to motocross
uh-huh.
now. I think companies are making triple clamps offset, and even if you look, if you work with a bike, if you look at a Honda, you know, I mean, they have 24 millimeter offset clamps in the beginning of the 450 CRFs, then they went to 22s and 20s. So there's actually different parts available right in the Honda parts book, and I'm sure the other manufacturers are the same.
Yeah, same way. EFI is nice too.
The EFI is getting really nice. It's a good system, and they're consistent every
yeah.
weekend. You
yeah.
know, it's exactly the same, and that's really important to make sure the bike is the same every day.
Yeah, no, there's that's a massive improvement on the bikes in my eyes for sure, even at a privateer level, because, you know, even though the jetting, it's a 450 bike, jetting still mattered, and there's a lot of mechanics in the privateers that maybe didn't know what they were doing with four-stroke carburetors, and therefore almost endangering their riders out there. So, I mean, it's a, as a for a privateer weapon, EFI has made a big difference.
I think so. I think it does soften the bike a little bit. It softens the power, which maybe makes it more controllable.
Right, right. So when you're building a motor for a team like Hart and Huntington, or last year Ben Evans and Alex Martin, you did their motors as well. Team Ty Lube. Do you have a base setup? Do you have a same setup that everybody would run, or each setup tailored to a rider?
I have a base setup that I'll start with.
Yeah.
And then we'll go out with
that the you know works. You've measured it. You've raced it. Dynoed it. Yeah.
Something that's pretty good.
Right.
And then we'll go up with the riders and see where they're at. You know, some of them will be like, this is pretty good. And some of them will be like, hey, this isn't good enough. I want more.
Yeah.
Or last year my bike did this. Can we do that?
Right.
Sort of thing.
And the bikes haven't exactly, well, I guess the 2009 CR450 made quite a bit of difference. It was quite a bit of new bike.
It was significantly different.
Right.
Obviously, the chassis was completely new.
Yeah.
The engine, similar design with it being a four-valve, single overhead cam. But Honda they compressed a lot of stuff, made smaller parts, made everything. And it's all about the chassis, you know, lower center of gravity, lighter. Everything's smaller and lighter. So we had to relearn a little bit some things. You know, a smaller part necessarily isn't as durable or as strong.
Right.
Not that it's not reliable, but when we start modifying it and
pushing
for more power,
we
got to remember that.
Let's go back to a little bit to your history here. You started with Kyle Lewis, Moto Triple X, 2002. I mean, well, actually, let's go back all the way. Let's talk about the riders you've worked for. Let's list them. Going back to 1995, when you quit racing in Canada and started working as a mechanic in the U.S. So, let's go.
The first professional rider I worked with was Tony Amoradio.
Okay.
And that was a KTM support team. It was run by RRP, Rossini Racing Products in Pennsylvania.
First sponsor of none other than?
A guy named Timmy Ferry.
Timmy Ferry, RRP.
Young kid.
So he made his mark.
Right. Yeah,
yeah. So anyway, enough of that. So after Amoradio, who'd you get?
After Amoradio, I bounced around for a season with a couple privateer riders. Dement was on the team, and he got let go. I worked with him for a little while. And I don't remember how it exactly went, but I know I ended up working at KTM.
Yeah.
After a season of just doing privateer stuff.
And you were at KTM, and you were in charge of the KJSC program.
Yeah.
The halftime 50cc race.
Yeah, I got to know the people at KTM from the KTM support team that we did with Anthony Amoradio, and an opportunity came up, and I jumped at it, and I went to work there.
Yeah.
And we did the KJSC, the KTM mini bike.
During the Supercross season, yeah.
And then I did a lot of amateur support and some desert racing, just so many different things that KTM's involved in.
Yeah. And you ran across a young Mike Alessi in the KTM KJSC, or was that before your time?
I met the Alessi family actually back with the RRP days, because it was KTM and the Alessis were associated with KTM, and I met them back then in 1995.
Yeah, and you go back a ways.
Yeah,
Mike was 4 years old or whatever, tearing it up.
Yeah.
Okay, so after that, you went. Well, you're kind of the team manager. You were, when the KTM entered into Supercross Motocross on a big time level in 2000, you were the team manager.
In 2000, when they put the team together, I mean, my title was team coordinator.
Yeah. That's right, because I was on the team.
Yeah, you were on the team.
You hired me, actually.
Hired you.
Yes.
And Selvaraj Narayana was vice president of KTM and also assumed the job as team manager.
Yeah, I was there. He wasn't the team manager. I was on that team. You can say what you want.
I did most of the work.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you did that for a year, and some unfortunate circumstances went down. Who knew that a truck driver had so much power? And
yeah, it was, you know, when push came to shove, you know, I found out the truck driver was more valuable.
Yes, yes. And so 2001, you went to Factory Connection, and you worked for Steve Boniface.
Yeah, 2001, I found myself really surprisingly out of a job, and I was pretty good friends with Rick Ziegfelder, Ziggy from Factory Connection, and he was like, well, I need somebody.
Yeah.
I just kind of walked into a mechanic position with Steve Boniface.
And surprisingly, you got let go at KTM after Kelly Smith and I delivered a win at Mount Morris in the mud.
I thought we had a fantastic year. It was the first year for the team.
Unfortunate with Donovan Mitchell getting hurt before the season. That was,
Yeah, Donovan, it was, everything was going great. We were putting the team together. We did the big press release. We did a big photo shoot out at Cooperland.
Yeah.
And then everybody went home for Thanksgiving, and Donovan went and raced the LACR.
Day in the Dirt. Which just coincidentally was this weekend. Yeah.
Yeah, and unfortunately had a horrific injury.
Yeah. And so it didn't start the team off well, but Shane King came over.
Yeah,
I mean, King came over. He wasn't, I mean, he's a great guy, but he wasn't super cross ready.
It was definitely a struggle, or entertaining, you might say, to try and watch Shane ride what at the time was a 540 KTM, because you were allowed to ride up to 540cc engines in Supercross. A bike that had never been ridden in Supercross before.
Yeah.
And he had so many options at his disposal, being from the Austrian factory team.
Yeah.
He had a
400.
He had a 400.
A 450.
Every
520 and 540. Yeah. I think he had four different sizes,
and then different gearboxes.
Right, that's true. Yep.
And and plus it was Supercross, and Shane King, you know, he 6'3", 6'4", 220
monster pounds of a man. Grew up on the GP circuits.
Yeah.
At this point, he was 30 something years old. He wasn't going to exactly pick up scrubbing.
No.
Right. I mean, it was going to be.
Triples were intimidating for him, and that was probably the least technical obstacle on the whole track.
So you left there, truck driver one, team manager nothing, and you went to Boniface. And after that season, you found yourself looking for a job again.
Yeah, surprisingly enough, at the end of that season, Boniface got hired by KTM.
Yeah.
And he asked me to go with him to KTM. And Ron Heben had taken over as a team manager.
Yes.
And I talked to Ron about it. And Ron actually wanted me to come back. And I talked to Ziggy, and Ziggy said, no, I want you to stay here. You have a job. You're good.
Yeah.
At that point, he had hired Michael Byrne, and we were getting ready for Motocross of Nations.
Yes.
And this is also, I went out to New Hampshire, and we're getting ready for Motocross of Nations. We tested. We spent a month getting ready. We're packaging everything up, getting it all crated. And that was 9/11.
Yeah.
And then, so that kind of messed all that up.
But you still went.
I ended up still going. The USA and Honda, obviously everybody, they chose not to go.
Yeah.
I still went to help support
Australia.
Australia.
Yeah.
And brought over what parts I could carry in my bag. And the Australian Federation found bikes and found stuff over there last minute. We put it all together, and we raced Motocross the Nations.
Yeah.
When I came back, Factory Connection had hired J.C. Waterhouse to be their manager, and he informed me I didn't have a job anymore.
The way it works in the world sometimes in professional motocross racing.
Yeah, that's the way it works. I think it's happened to all of us.
Happened to me a few times.
And it was more those riders had just chosen to bring their mechanics.
Yeah.
And, you know, what can I say? That's it.
Right. Now, we were living together, first in San Diego, where you got us evicted for having race fuel in the garage.
Yes, our neighbor did not like the smell of
the smell of race fuel. Got us evicted out of the apartment. We moved together to Corona, living together again in Corona, and right off McKinley exit. And I got you the job, your next rider. You needed a job, and I was working for, well, I was supposed to work for McGrath. What happened? Much like a la Alan Brown, I got screwed in the end, despite being promised a job.
I think that's the second time Larry Brooks did that to you.
Yeah, yeah. yes. So I started working for Nick Way at Moto Triple X that season, and Kyle Lewis needed a guy, a mechanic, and there you were. I got you the job at working for Kyle that year.
Yeah, you did. You said, hey, you know, they need a mechanic. You should call Kyle. I called Kyle up,
right,
and I just said, hey, I hear you need a mechanic. And he's like, yeah, do you know somebody? And I said, yeah, I sure do.
Yeah.
He's like, who? I said, me. And he was like, really? Okay.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was pretty much that simple.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And you guys had a great year that year. Actually, the whole team did. We were on Moto Triple X. It was Larry Ward, Nick Way, and Kyle Lewis. And Nick Way got top privateer in the Supercross Series. Kyle Lewis got top privateer in the Outdoor Series. Larry Ward got top three at Washougal. Kyle got top five. And Nick Way was seventh or something
at Washougal. I think we did even better than that.
Did we?
Washougal, I think Larry podiumed. and Kyle both, they both podiumed on the overall.
So oh, they did. And then Nick was fifth then, or
yeah,
something.
Nick might have been fifth. I think Larry won a moto.
Yeah.
And Kyle got third.
Yeah, just a real good year for privateers. Yeah. And you and I were behind the scenes trying to hold it together, really. At that point, Moto Triple X, the glory days had long gone. And, I mean, Kurt Haller was doing his best to get it together. But, I mean, there was certainly lots of things lacking, but we were trying our best. And
that was,
we had
was,
a good season.
That year was a lot of fun.
It was.
It was a lot of work. It was a lot of fun. You know, we had, there was yourself, myself, and Doug Stone. The three of us, I think. Just
all Canadians.
It out. All Canadians.
Yeah. All and, Canadians.
And then we had Chet, the driving the concept hauler around.
Yeah. I like how when we were at Triple X, it was, you know, no plane tickets. Everybody's on the road all season. Be prepared to live on the road. And I'm like, cool, okay. And I did that. I lived on the road out of a box van. And you flew still somehow to the races.
I know, you still don't believe me, but I did. I paid for my plane tickets. I said to Kurt, I said, I'm going to go home pretty regular. And he was like, go ahead, do whatever you want. He said, but the team's not paying for it. And
yeah, well,
Kyle was, I'll thank Kyle that year. He was pretty generous also, and he helped out. He knew that none of the mechanics on the team were making much money. And,
no.
You know,
what were we making, $400 a week? $300?
Yeah, $2,000 a month or something.
Yeah.
It was really crazy to think about it. If you offered that job to somebody now and it's only 8 years later,
they
laugh at you.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Especially doing all the thing that we had to do. I mean, I was doing suspension on the road, changing oil, and doing case splitting the motor. Come to find out, I was splitting the motor like every week because Nick was in the running, or every 2 weeks. Come to find out, I got a job at Factory Yamaha the next year, and we split our motors like once in a blue moon for Supercross.
Yeah, less.
Yeah, less. Way less. And I'm out in a box van splitting it every week trying to find, you know, I got my my hot plate and I'm trying to split these cases thinking, oh, I'm going to do it the factory way, and here they are doing it less. So, anyways. Sometimes less is more.
There is, yeah. Sometimes we can overdo it.
Yeah. So you guys had a great year, and in 2000, you continued to work for Kyle in 02, and then 03, you worked for Kyle again. 04 still as mechanic, or
yeah, I don't remember.
When did you start segueing into the manager of Moto Triple X?
I think it was more 2005.
Okay,
because there was a year when Damon Huffman came on board because Kyle got hurt, and Damon Huffman came on board for Supercross only.
Yeah,
and
that would have been 05. Yeah,
that'd have been 05.
Because the World Rounds were that year in Spain and all
that. Was
that
the first
or was
first
that the next year?
The first year of the World Rounds.
It was 03. I went.
We went to
Holland and
Switzerland and Holland.
Right.
I went with Kyle, and I think Kyle ended up getting hurt. He did the first two rounds and got hurt practicing. And then I ended up being Larry's mechanic.
Right.
And then the next year, Larry stopped racing. And Damon was full-time, and we went to the World Rounds with Damon.
That's right, yeah. That was the mud year. Spain was muddy.
That was the in Seville, Spain. That was the muddiest race ever.
And so when did you? And so then you started being a mechanic or a team manager after that? You started getting
I really
more.
Started organizing a lot of stuff back then. When we hired Damon, you know, we had a plan, and I said to Damon, hey, we're going to go test. We're going to get ready. We're going to do these World Rounds. He's like, yeah, I really want to do them. I said, okay, well, we're going to build a bike here, test, and ship it. And he just kind of looked at me with a blank look on his face, and he said, like, whatever.
Yeah.
And
you're like, we're going to do it right.
Yeah, we're going to do it right. And he kind of didn't believe me. And, you know, sure enough, we showed up in Spain, and we get there, and there's a crate. And Damon's like, what's that? I open it up, and we roll out his motorcycle, and he's like, wow, you actually did it.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't think it was really going to happen like this. And,
yeah.
We had a really – it was a bittersweet year because we did really, really well.
Yeah.
But we, you know, we missed the little – that one little championship that we could have won. It would have been really nice to win.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that's top privateer in the Supercross series. And then so you kind of started being more manager at Moto Triple X. And then, I don't know, somehow you segued into getting a controlling interest of the team, of the team name.
Yeah, there was a point where Kurt was the founder, Kurt, Jordan, and Eric, the founders of Moto Triple X. Kurt was basically the person running everything.
Right.
Also a cinematographer that made the videos. He was moving on in his life. He was having, he was having his second child at that point,
mm-hmm.
and really didn't want to do the work of all the work of the race team,
the day-to-day,
stuff, and the financial responsibility was the biggest part of it because it was a big burden on Moto Triple X, and you know that's when he just came to me and said, "Hey, if you want to keep doing this, go ahead."
Yeah.
Take it over. You can have everything to do with the race team. Just do it.
Yeah.
It's your baby. And I just assumed the responsibility of it and just ran with it.
Yeah. And don't forget the Motor Triple X. So the videos are still going on a little bit. Clothing, still selling clothing, and that was a whole other part of the operation.
Yeah, the clothing sales were still there. Kurt hadn't produced a video in several years.
Mm-hmm.
I think more of the family, the kids. He just got, you know, yeah, that became more of a priority in his life.
Right. And Jordan and Eric, Jordan Burns, Eric Sandin, the two drummers, NOFX, Strung Out, they were more silent partners over the years. I mean, they put their initial investment in, and then...
They put their initial investment, they flew the flag, they definitely, you know, came out and supported everybody.
Yeah.
But they had full-time professional jobs being musicians, traveling all around the world. So, I mean, and they had to take care of that, you know, that business too.
So, you know, you're now in charge of hiring the riders. You now have a semi. You have, you know, budgets, everything else. How much did you miss being a mechanic some days? Because when it was a lot simpler.
There's definitely the simple side of it.
Yeah.
You know, the ease of just showing up, doing your bike, and going home.
Right.
Not worrying about it, you know. But I like new challenges. I like new things. So I always like just pushing myself.
Yeah.
So it was good.
And your rider decisions worked out pretty good. I gotta admit, I mean, I never knew too much about Summy. I mean, we raced him. Kelly Smith and I raced him on the East Coast four-stroke nationals. But, you know, he had that one year at Samsung Yamaha. And, I mean, you hired him. And I'm like, eh. And, you know, you hired Justin Buckaloo kind of when he was on the outs. Larry Ward and Damon Huffman, we just spoke about Lewis. They all did really well on your program on really what would amount to a factory team's food budget for the year. I mean, it was incredible when you think back to how little money you had to work with.
Yeah, when you think we're operating with, you know, less than $500,000 for an entire year with a riders up to four riders, you know, 30 events.
Yeah.
a staff of maybe 10 people.
Yeah.
It's not a lot.
Yeah, yeah. $500,000 sounds a lot, but not when you think about it in a race team term.
When you think about it, yeah.
Yeah.
We always did our best with what we had, you know,
I mean,
like you said.
Yeah, there were some teams, and I was proud to be on Moto Triple X and doing as well as, you know, Nick and I did, and because I knew what was going on behind the scenes. It was just like, you know, just juggling balls, you know, putting out fires left and right. And you know, when you took it over, I mean, Summy got 10th overall in the 450 Nationals one year. Lewis was always up front doing well. Damon Huffman almost won that title. Timmy Ferry, I know him well. You hired him, you took a chance on him, and he wasn't making much money coming off a factory team. And it didn't start off good because the wrist still wasn't great. But eventually you got him. I mean, you got him back on a factory ride. He was top fiving by the end of the season. So all that stuff, people have to realize there were teams with way more money. Alan's being modest. There were many teams, and I could think of WBR, Subway, Coca-Cola. Help me out here.
Back then, I don't know.
ECC.
Yeah, there was
I mean, a lot of teams with a lot more money and a lot better looking, let's say, semis and setups and all that were getting half the results you were. That had to have been a little bit of source of pride.
It was a source of pride. I mean, I can, no matter what, I can look back at it and say, man, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, it was really cool to have made those, you know, just reach those goals, I guess. You know, it doesn't sound like much, but at the end of the season with Justin Buckaloo, you know, he came to me at the end of the year and he said, hey, he says, you know what? He said, this has been a fantastic season. He says, it's the first time I've ever finished a complete season.
Mm-hmm.
I've never done that before. You know, and it doesn't sound like a lot, but, I mean, to go at the time, I think it was 29 or 30 events, you know, times two motos a weekend. It's a grueling long schedule for these guys.
Yeah.
You know, and to be healthy for every single race is not easy.
And also, I mean, in one way, it's a probably a sense of pride to you that Damon Huffman left for much more money at another team. I mean, he was basically making probably peanuts at Triple X. Buckaloo also left for more money. The riders, they got to look after themselves. They go to these other teams, and all of a sudden they're like, wait a minute. Like, it's fancy, but it's not that good. Their results all went downhill after they left. I mean, that's kind of indisputable.
The one thing that I think everybody wanted to, and even Kurt and Jordan and Eric, everybody that started Triple X, everybody that was involved with the team and the brand, it was about doing the best we could possibly do.
Yeah.
It was never about, you know,
Second, third, fourth.
His team has to make money or whatever. Let's get the best results. That's the guys. Get the guys that are going to put out the most amount of effort and work hard. Guys that want to race. And that was one of the big reasons I wanted to work with Timmy that year we did, because I knew he wanted to race.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I literally had to beg him to come race. He was going to retire.
Yeah.
And I said, you can still do this. And the money wasn't there. And he was like, man, I need to make some money. And I said, it's just not there.
Yeah, he was in the hole pretty much before he started with his insurance and disability and a gear and practice track and all that stuff. I mean,
yeah, I would imagine for a guy like Timmy at that point, I mean, it cost him $100,000 before he even shows up at Anaheim.
Yeah.
His personal commitments to be ready.
I was backing you up, though. I was convincing him to go. And, it, you know, like you said, it had to have been feeling good when Factory Kawasaki picks him up at the end of the year.
Yeah, probably. I'd say at the end of that season, Timmy probably maybe broke even.
Yeah.
But what he did get, he got that elusive factory contract back on top again.
Yeah.
And he raced, what, 3 more years?
Yeah.
3 years factory count.
Maybe 4, maybe 5.
Yeah, we don't know. He has not, who knows? There has been no official announcement made of
yes.
Timmy Ferry for 2000.
It must have been good to work with him that year. I know. Oh, man, I'm jealous. I'd let him go by then, you know. I let him go. Yeah. I moved on.
He was always a good sport. I mean, I met him back in the RRP days, and he's just always a good guy, you know?
Yeah.
So he was just a fun guy to work with. And
he's pretty normal, too. He's pretty normal.
He's really down to earth.
Anyways, and by trade, so then, you know, you start doing Triple X, you start being the manager, and all of a sudden you're probably looking around going, well, I can give this company some money and they can build motors for me, or your trade is an auto mechanic, correct?
I grew up in a car dealership. My dad,
right.
You know, grew me up. I grew up in the dealership, and I grew up working on cars in the back. I enjoyed it. I went to a technical school and wanted to race motorcycles.
Yeah.
Somehow.
So you're always a tinkerer, even on your own bikes.
Yeah. Even myself and my best friend, I mean, we were 14, 15 years old, and we'd buy old cars and take them apart and do whatever we could in the driveway just to tinker with them.
So as you're the manager manager of Motor Triple X slash owner, you're like, I can pay somebody to do motors, or I can do them myself. And slowly but surely, you started figuring out how to build good motors. I mean, it helped also that, you know, you always seem to have good starters, Buckaloo, Lewis, Huffy, you know what I mean? Like, it was hand in hand, but you started getting attention for your motors.
Yeah, and we did. We got good starts, and we had good results when we finished races.
Yeah, your motors were good.
And the motors were good. The riders were happy.
Yeah.
You know, I spent 3 years, we were heavily supported by Yoshimura for 3 years, and they gave us a workshop to work out of at their building in Chino. They provided us with a semi. And we learned a lot there.
Yeah.
You know, I had a lot of resources, a lot of knowledgeable people to learn from and just to get more ideas and testing equipment. I mean, the place, the race shop that I worked in, they've got 5 dynos just in their race shop. You know,
right.
A complete machine shop. I mean, a grinding room. I mean, they've got, the workshops are completely air-conditioned. It was incredible. It was
a
beautiful place.
Yeah.
And
you started getting good at building motors.
Yeah, we got good at it. You know,
yeah.
I learned a lot of tricks from those guys.
Yeah, yeah. And as well, Factory Honda would come around, and as you start doing better in the results, they start coming around a little more, right?
I mean, yeah, when the 450 Honda came out in 2002, Kyle got on board, and we did really well. And the better you do, the more support you get.
Yeah.
The better you do, the more information you get.
The more people come by.
It snowballed.
Yeah, it was like that. I think of it, too, like when I worked for Nick, he did okay in the Supercross series. All of a sudden, he started putting in some good finishes. Yamaha Steve Butler walks over one weekend halfway through the season, drops off a set of wheels, a swing arm, and a frame. He's like, here you go. You guys are doing well. You know, I'm like,
we got extras.
I'm like, cool. You know what I mean? That's how it works. It results speak for sure. I mean, it's all coming together for you now as an owner, and you're building good motors, you're getting good riders, you're getting good results on really, like I said, a shoestring budget. And so things are coming together, but then kind of things don't come together for Moto Triple X.
The Moto Triple X, the sales kind of really started to dwindle. And like we said earlier, unfortunately, Kurt was focusing more on his family and some new things in his life. So the marketability of Moto Triple X was really dropping.
Mm-hmm.
And in turn, the economy started to get tighter. Everything started to get tighter in 2007, 2008. Everybody was starting to cut back. It's no big surprise.
Yeah. That,
you know,
where we are now. Where we are now. Yeah.
It dropped off dramatically, and it just got to a point where it was just, the budget was too small to make it work. I just had to say, hey, this was really fun. It was really cool.
Yeah.
But I just can't do it anymore.
Yeah. And are you talking more like just your handlebar company would give you less money or no money? Or is that what you mean? That's the kind of sponsors?
Yeah. For example, like at a high point, you know, we had.
Yeah, let's go.
A handlebar company would be $40,000 for the season.
Right.
You know, a boot company, you know, CD Boots was they were a fantastic company and they supported us as much as they could, you know, and at a high point it was $40,000. Of course, that went down and
went
down. And in turn,
even though your results are same, it's just,
okay, but eventually then the riders had, you know, I couldn't attract as good a rider.
Yeah.
So it just went right back down again.
Yeah, yeah. And you've pulled the pin on MotoXXX, God rest its soul. Many, many good riders, many mechanics. How many mechanics at the factory level have been through MotoXXX? There's surprisingly a lot.
I remember, I think one year when you were at Yamaha, there was, of all three factory mechanics, had kind of gotten their start at MotoXXX.
Yeah, yeah. And as well as Sean Ulikowski, who was Preston's mechanic at Honda.
At Honda. Kyle Bentley right now, who Christoph Purcell's mechanic. And Jake Weimer, Sean Irwin, his mechanic. I mean, those are some of the most recent
guys. Two of the guys on Pro Circuit worked at XXX as recently as a couple years ago.
Yeah, Nick Way's mechanic worked at MotoXXX. We've had, I mean, there's been so many guys.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. It's underrated. I always said you should make that T-shirt with all the mechanics' names on it.
Yeah.
Or all the riders and mechanics, sort of industry people that have come through.
Yeah, a T-shirt with a list of names. It would be really cool. I've thought about doing it.
Yeah.
And I've talked to Kurt about doing it, and we never got around to
it. Yeah, yeah. But. It would be surprising, I think. People would be surprised, you know. But so now Brown Motorsports, sort of a motor building company. You kept your shop, MotoXXX shop still. You have that. You have all your equipment, and you just segued into doing customer stuff and race team motors.
Yeah, Even back with the MotoXXX days, I had to figure out a way to supplement the income because the sponsorship wasn't enough to get the race team going.
Yeah,
to keep it going. So yeah, I was like, hey, we're doing engines here. Why not offer it to the consumer? You know, it's a good way to add income and to be a little bit more self-sufficient. You know, I would have hoped maybe we could have got more business and not relied on sponsors so much. But
it's a tough business, the motor building business.
Yeah.
You know?
So I've continued since the funding to run the race team has kind of gone away. I have continued with, you know, building engines for customers and tried to offer help to other race teams.
Yeah.
And Kenny Watson, a friend of mine, also probably one of the big reasons MotoXXX even got started.
Yeah. Yeah. Another point. Yeah.
Yeah. Huge.
OG.
Yeah. Huge person. I mean, he put the three people together.
Purple-haired Kenny.
Kenny Watson.
Wrenching for Deegan.
Yeah, he called me and said, hey, Alan, you know, we need some help. Would you be interested in building our engines?
Right.
And I said, hey, yeah, sure. So we met up. We made a deal, and we're going on our second year.
And how did the whole Ty Lue, Ben Evans, Alex Martin, who you also did their motors for, how did that come together?
Ty Lue is a company from the Midwest that's owned by a person named Joe Murphy, who's been around our sport, more of a silent partner.
He's been in the background,
In the background for over 15 years. Yeah. People have no idea. But
big supporter, yeah.
Big supporter of MotoXXX. He's become a personal friend. And he said to me, he said, hey, I want to do this team. I want to help Alex Martin. He's from the Midwest. He's an up-and-coming rookie. And he said, I want to do a team. Will you help me? We helped me with technical stuff, and let's work together. So we did, and that was a lot of fun. And then Ben Evans came on board, and you know, Ben was a really good hard worker too. So
yeah, and Ben finished. I think he was probably top privateer in the 250 Nationals, or no?
I think he slipped a little bit.
Did he?
He slipped a little bit at the end. He wasn't feeling well. He missed one National. I don't think he did get the top privateer.
Yeah. So let me ask you this: if somebody has enough money, will you build them the exact same motor that Matt Bonney won the Privateer Award with last season?
Oh, for sure. For sure. And that's something that, you know, I think a lot of people could benefit from. I think I have good packages that aren't crazy expensive.
Yeah.
You know, part of what I had to learn was how to make this, make the bike run well on a budget.
Yeah.
You know, on a budget, and replace the key parts that are going to make the difference and not worry about, we weren't worried so much about the fluff or the shiny or the bling, because if it didn't make power, we didn't need it.
Yeah. And how can people get a hold of you?
They could reach me through my office number. It's 951-359-6970.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm there pretty much 5 days a week unless I'm out at the Supercrosses or Motocrosses.
Email?
Email brownmx@prodigy.net.
All right. There you go, people. You can have the exact same motor Matt Bonney has. Probably shouldn't tell Kenny Watson that, but whatever. Did you tell Kenny that you were giving him that brown special, and then now, so he's like, oh, cool.
You can, I mean, it was developed by those guys right now. I mean, I've worked with those guys for going on the second year on the 09 Honda.
And you got a new team this year, new deal going on.
I'm working on something right now.
Don't want to talk about it, though.
I hate to be one of those guys that says something before it's done, you know.
It's going
to
happen.
It's going to happen, yeah. It's going.
I mean, I know it's going to happen.
We're ironing it out.
Oh, God.
It's not Timmy Ferry, unfortunately.
It's not Timmy Ferry. No, it's not.
Timmy is... I still don't know what Timmy's doing. I've talked to him.
There's a master plan there. I'll leave it at that.
I hear there's a master plan.
There's a master plan.
Maybe you'll share that with the world someday.
One day.
You do like, you know, breaking stories. And
I know. And thank you for reading Pulp MX, by the way. I hear that you do, so thank you.
I read it, yes.
So you got a new deal going on. You can't talk about it, but you're going to be working with a high-profile rider.
Yeah, we're going to be doing...
Brown Motorsports.
Tyloo, Brown Motorsports. We're going to have... I mean, last year, Alex Martin and Ben Evans. This year, we're looking at a full season, 450 motocross and supercross. And hopefully, maybe to try and get back up there, you know, racing as one of the top privateers.
Yeah, yeah.
In the 450 class.
Right. Okay. All right. So you don't want to talk about it. That's fine. I guess in your experience, you know, I get a lot of emails and about these podcasts. People want to talk to, or people want me to talk to a technical person. Apparently, I'm not technical enough. So I guess let's throw it your way. What can the average guy do to his bike to increase the performance? What would you recommend for the weekend warrior guy to just maybe help himself out a little bit?
I mean, obviously there's an incredible amount of aftermarket pipe companies out there. That's a pretty easy way. You know, you can, if you look at the different pipes out there, you can find something that's significantly lighter than your pipe and makes more performance, you know, makes better power.
Right.
You know, you want to, it's an expensive way to go, but it's a good, easy way that anybody can just order it, bolt it on, and go riding.
Yeah.
Minimal jetting changes normally. You know, you can normally get away with quite a bit.
Here's what I tell people when they ask me. High compression piston.
A piston's an easy way to go.
Yeah, easy way. You'll notice a power increase. It'll bump it up a little bit. Sometimes you got to go to race gas, but makes a difference, a noticeable difference for a guy.
It's a noticeable difference. It's a little bit more involved.
True.
Change a piston on a four-stroke.
You and I are master mechanics, so.
And the next, I guess the next step after that, you'd be looking at a camshaft.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically, look at your car. You know, what would you do if you had a 69 Camaro?
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to get a wicked camshaft? Well, it's the same engine. It's a four-stroke engine, you know.
Right.
You know, it's the same as when you used to get your engine ported on your two-stroke, and they change the port heights, and they change the design. The camshaft does so much of that work now.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a big part of the engine.
And you actually make your own camshafts to your own specs. You don't make them, but you get them made for you to your own specs.
I have cams done for me through Crower Performance.
Yeah.
He's in Temecula. We've developed some really good stuff together, and I have some specs that I'm really happy about, and I think they're reliable. And
can you change can you put your cam in without doing a spring, without doing valve springs? Or
some of them yes, some of them no.
Yeah.
But generally, if you're changing a camshaft, you're probably going to need some springs.
Yeah. Yeah.
They work hand in hand.
Right. And how much do you go in and clean out the head? How much is there of that kind of work? There's not a lot of room in there nowadays in the bikes, but
there's not a lot to be gained. you're getting more into higher end stuff. When you say, "Hey, I'm going to take my 450 cylinder head and get it."
Yeah, I guess this question evolved from what could you do simply. Now we're
we went from putting a pipe on to putting a piston in to putting cams in to completely porting your engine.
Yeah.
So,
well, let's go this way. On a Pro Circuit 250F, what part of the valve train slash crank slash piston flywheel do you think is stock?
On their race bike?
Yeah.
Christophe Purcell's bike?
Yeah. Let's say, what do you, you know, just, I mean, obviously you don't know, or maybe you do from Roadblock, Kyle Bentley, but, you know, just to give the listener an idea of how much is done to those motorcycles.
You know, potentially everything has been modified.
Yeah.
You know, really, potentially everything. However, it doesn't mean that everything was modified. It doesn't mean everything needs to be modified.
Right.
Sometimes, and I've had a few customers, you know, they're like, is this all I need, but I want more? And it's like, I can sell you more stuff, and it looks really nice, but it isn't going to change the performance.
Yeah.
You know, Pro Circuit, they might be changing connecting rods, you know, for different material, or stronger, or shorter, or longer. Who knows? You know, they might... I'm quite certain they'll be changing pistons, you know, valve springs, camshafts, valve seat material. It gets really expensive.
Yeah, you know, yeah, it
it's
does.
It's really involved.
And what about, what's your take on sort of, how much advantage do you think the factory bikes have over privateers? What do you think about that? You know, you always hear the, if Ryan Clark, longtime privateer, had a factory bike, he would finish 10 spots better. I don't believe in that. What do you think?
I think it's the mental confidence that a rider might have on a factory bike. The bikes are going to feel a lot lighter and be more nimble, you know, like you were saying with the chassis, but they have the confidence, you know, they get on the bike and it's, I mean, the thing is brand new and they know it's the best possible bike they could have. And, you know, in our sport, it comes down to the rider so much and they have to be confident in their motorcycle, in their equipment, in the people around them.
Right.
That makes a big difference.
Yeah. So you didn't answer the question, though.
The chassis, lighter.
Yeah.
And the confidence.
Yeah.
The confidence that gives the rider. He knows that he can outbreak the rider next to him because that rider's motorcycle is 20 pounds heavier or it doesn't have as good brakes.
Yeah, we didn't touch on weight at all. Weight's a big deal.
Weight can be
a big deal. 217 is, no, 219 now for 450s, correct?
I think so, yeah.
219 for 450s. I remember the factory bike that I had weighing in at like 221. And I know the stock bike, 234. You know, we were adding weight and suspension components, but shaving weight everywhere else. And a privateer's bike? Well, I mean, did you ever weigh your bike versus...
Our bikes, when we'd get our bikes, we'd get impounded. Generally, we were 10 to 15 pounds heavier.
Yeah.
And not only were we 10 to 15 pounds heavier, we were probably 10 to 15 pounds heavier where you don't want the weight.
Yeah, yeah. Another key part.
Which is a key part of, you know, Honda or the any manufacturer, they're gonna take all the weight off that they can.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to be like, oh boy, this is too light. And then they're going to add weight where it helps the chassis.
Yeah.
You know, where they need to add the weight. Oh, the front end's too light. Well, we're going to add weight to the front end or add weight to the back end mm-hmm. or make it more balanced.
Yeah.
So...
Do you, and again, I know the answer to some of these questions, but do the factories cheat?
I don't think they cheat. I don't think anybody knowingly, intentionally cheats. Because of the production rule, we might say there's some questionable parts out there.
Right.
You know, that we're like, hey, that's not fair. We can't get this or we can't get that. But intentionally cheating to gain an advantage, I would say no.
Yeah. How did Stewart ever race that bike at the U.S. Open, by the way?
I don't know. I don't think
I've asked a bunch of people that question.
I don't know. Is that what rule?
I'm not saying that's cheating, but they were racing under the AMA rule book, apparently.
AMA rule book. Yeah.
So
is the bike homologated? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it was.
Yeah. I didn't have any riders participating in the race, so I wasn't able to protest.
Yeah. Well, is there one race that stands out in your mind, either as a mechanic or as an owner, like that made you real proud or just really? I mean, was Washougal race with Lewis, or I mean, was there?
Yeah, but Washougal race with Kyle getting on the podium was a lot of fun.
He led for a while, I think, huh?
He led for a while. You know, winning that race with Kelly Smith was a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, in Mount Morris, with me tuning on it.
Even with you as a mechanic, it was amazing. The bike didn't break, but
yeah,
in the end, Travis Pastrana's bike broke and Mark didn't, and we won.
That's so, correct.
Anytime when we're faced with a challenge, like Daytona 2 years ago in the rain,
yeah,
it was satisfying to get out of there and say, hey, we got a fifth place and a ninth place.
Right.
And guys' bikes were just not running and, you know, breaking down, and it was like, hey, we did good.
You won a heat race, too. Won a heat race.
Won a heat race with Antonio Balbi, and Eric Sorby got ninth, and they were troopers. And
yeah.
The bikes ran great, and I like those kind of races because I think it takes away the factory advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I wish there was more. We could put that into racing more.
Yeah.
It levels the playing field for the privateer teams.
What's funny is that, like, a fifth and a ninth, you probably got no press from that. You know, the fans went home without thinking about that. The press didn't talk about it too much, although I probably wrote in observations because I'm observant like that. But, you know, that's a big accomplishment, a fifth and a ninth. That's massive. Yeah. In the mud race, like you said, you know, Chad Reed's bike didn't make it. A lot of bikes didn't make it.
I mean, I remember standing right there watching Chad's bike quit, you know, and it's no fault of the mechanic. We just got through it, you know, and just getting through those type of races, getting through those seasons and when the going gets tough and we're still in there.
Yeah.
And we're doing well.
As a team owner, what kind of bugged you? What got into your bug about, I mean, we all know the factories get preferential treatment to a certain extent. You know, they're in there, they're racing, they have the best riders. But as a privateer guy, what really got into you, privateer owner?
It's how much you have to fight to, you know, fight to stand your ground, to get the exposure to say, hey, we're here. We're here and we're part of the show.
I know.
You know.
It's like you told me a few times, just like, hey, we've been here for 10 years now, every weekend.
Yeah. You know, I've had discussions with the NPG, you know, a few years back. I said, hey, we've got one of our riders has a motorhome. Can we get a pass for the driver?
Yeah.
And, you know, NPG said to me, no, that's only for top 10 riders.
Yeah.
Only for riders in the top 10. And I said, that's perfectly fine. Then I understand. I said, I'd like my two free passes. And you know, I was met with, like, what do you mean?
Right.
I said, well, I've got Timmy Ferry, Kyle Lewis. They're both in the top 10. So,
or like, Summy, maybe.
And
then.
Summy. And, yeah. I mean, I just could rattle off names.
Yeah.
I'm like, so I just, you know, please. I just like to be treated equally.
Right, yeah. No, sometimes the privateer guys get overlooked. It's just like they don't think about it, you know?
The sport has been supported by the... It's been supported by the manufacturers, and we're here because of the manufacturers.
Yeah.
Because they want to sell motorcycles.
Honda gave you bikes and parts.
Honda,
I mean, they were behind you, yeah.
And they were a fantastic sponsor. You know, I mean, they were really easy to deal with. You know, the deal was done really quickly.
Yeah.
It was, come get your stuff. We wish you the best.
Yeah.
You know, please let us know how you're doing. And obviously, you know, the MPG, the Feld Entertainment, they have to make sure that we're selling motorcycles. We're not selling motorcycles, none of us are racing.
Yeah, you're not going to have a race with 10 guys.
Yeah, so, I mean, we need to respect that. But I think that's going to start changing.
You do. You see the onslaught of more sort of non-factory teams racing with factory bikes?
I hear a lot of, I think, like we've seen in Europe. You know, we go to Europe, and the only factory team that's run by the factory is KTM.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is outsourced. You know, and it's...
Yeah.
I think the factories are looking in the United States now for people to do that, too, and I think they can do it for a fraction of the cost than doing it themselves.
Yeah, so that's what you see as being down the road.
It's already gone that way. Suzuki and Yamaha both outsourced their factory teams.
Yeah.
So, Suzuki's been doing it on the road racing side for many, many years.
Yeah.
So, I think... I don't know, but if you look at the writing on the wall, you'd think Honda and Kawasaki will be doing that shortly also.
For those people listening, Alan was my roadmate, my travel mate for the almost 2 week trip we did to Slovenia and the German GP and Venice and Krapovich we went to. I guess I covered that. Berlin. It's quite an adventure. A couple weeks.
We went to
12 days.
That was a really, really fun trip. It turned out really good.
Yeah, we had fun.
Yeah, we got lucky. I mean, you were stressed the whole time about getting lost, and we had a really, really nice rental car with a sick GPS.
I know. I brought my GPS,
We drove all around Europe, managed not to get arrested. You only got you know, almost arrested two or three times, I think. But
yeah, that was a sketchy deal. All right, man. Well, thanks for doing this. And one more time on that phone number for Brown Motorsports.
951-359-6970.
And the email?
brownmx@prodigy.net.
There you have it, folks. If you want the motor that Matt Bonney, Chris Blose, Ben Evans, Alex Martin, and a yet unnamed top 450 rider use in their motorcycles, give Alan a call or an email, and maybe he can hook you up. And there you go. I hope, hopefully people learned something today. I hope they did anyways. Anything else you want to talk about?
Oh, there's lots of stuff we could talk about, but, you know, we should just do it on a couch, maybe on Pulp MX.
Yeah, we should. Thank you for coming into my house. Thank you for coming around, bringing your dog around for our dogs to play with.
Yeah. Sorry about my dog peeing on your carpet.
Yeah, that's okay. We'll get over that. The bill will be in the mail. All right, you've been listening to the Racer X podcast. My guest has been Alan Brown. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week.
This has been the Racer X podcast show with Steve Mathis. Don't forget to check out some of our past shows with motocross legends such as the Beast from the East, Damon Bradshaw.
It got to the point where I didn't want to leave home, and once I got to the race, I wasn't into it. If I wasn't going to give 100%, I'm not going to take their money.
The working class hero, Doug Henry.
It was definitely an emotional moment for me, just thinking to myself, that's it, you know, and it's amazing the stuff that goes through your head in a short amount of time of the things that, you know, that I was going to miss.
The dogger, Ron Lachine.
Until you really open your ears and you want to listen to what they're saying, it's like beating a dead horse. And I know from personal experience, did anybody ever sit me down? Of course, everybody did.
Pro Circuits, Mitch Payton.
There's two ways to make the money. One is you can sign for money, or two, you can earn the money. I'm a high believer in earning the money. I think they ride better when they earn the money.
Seven-time, Jeremy McGrath.
I was so mad, like so disappointed and so frustrated that I pulled the pick and I left. Every point counts. I could kick myself to this day for not just riding around in tents. It's been no problem. My ego got in the way, you know?
The O Show, Johnny O'Mara.
Stuff that you sit there, you didn't even want to ride it, you just wanted to just look at it all day. I mean, I got a chance to test all that. I like that era I was in. I really do.
Subscribe to the Racer X podcast show through iTunes to enjoy these and many more great podcasts.
Why can't I just try? You know I've lost the blood. I won't let this die.